bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's November 7th, 2022, to be rebroadcast on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org on November 9th. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Hi, Franny. There's Fran's hand.
Jazz hands.
If you're watching. If you are watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. I may be able to respond, or maybe Fran will too. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, the bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I am recording my shows on Monday now using Facebook Live and then playing them at the normal times on Wednesday at WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Ron's Rant of the Week. Get out and vote. Yeah, guess what tomorrow is? Tomorrow's voting day. I am a moderator here in the town of Mansfield, so I'm pushing people to get out and vote because you really, you know, it's a good thing to do. It's definitely a good thing to do. We want a functional transportation system that doesn't kill tens of thousands of people a year. We're all in this together, do you know? So anyway, Americans vote more, much more often than other citizens in other democracies. Did you know that?
No, I
didn't. Isn't that interesting? That came from the New York Times this morning. I don't know if that was propaganda or whether it was just, you know, New York Times. Anyway, I posted an op-ed on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, which candidates are going the wrong way on traffic violence. And that was a post that was put together by Carrie Anna Provost. Which was on November 5th, and she is from the Connecticut News Junkie. So you might want to check it out because it'll give you a list of people that are, you know, and their traffic violence views. I'm not going to say that it's favorable for every candidate out there. So anyway, it's definitely something you may want to take a good look at and see, because tomorrow you're going to vote. Or maybe you voted already. Maybe you're like me and I voted already. Fran voted already. I do absentee because I'm an election official, so I get to have the luxury of doing absentee ballot. And remember, there's a very important question on the Connecticut ballot this year. Do we want early voting? Yes or no? Simple question. I think that the majority of people will say yes, even whether they're affiliated with one party or the other party. It just makes a whole lot more sense. So anyway, hi, Chris. How you doing? Hi, Eric. How are you doing? So anyway, we got some listeners out there. Very cool. Love to see you guys. Hopefully we'll see you on your bike soon, Chris. I guess you're kind of off your bike for the moment. On a positive side, always a shout out to Billy Too Tall Dujack and Laura Mullaly. Best wishes from Fran and I for speedy recoveries. See you Saturday, Billy. Ha. Another thing, Laura has recently posted, and she is home and doing better, and she posted a lovely picture of her bicycle this morning and the effects of throwing a perfectly good bicycle under a dump truck. Aww. Unfortunately, Laura threw her body there too, so that's kind of not so good. But anyway, Laura, just get better. We shout you out every week. We're very concerned, and we would love to see you back on your bike again. And can't wait for that moment to happen. Please let me know. I'd love to go for a ride with you. And anyway, enough of that. We have birthdays. Our friend Larry Waxman and Richard Fries. And it seems like I had another one here. John Tarbox.
Yeah.
They're all having birthdays today. Cool. Very, very cool. So, anyway, the other thing on a positive side, I got a few things here. I also attended the Connecticut committee meeting for the East Coast Greenway Alliance last week, which was a live and also a virtual conference by Bruce Donald. And we got an update as to what's going on with the rail trail system here in the state of Connecticut. Lots of great positive things going on. There's some interesting connections that are going to happen once crossing over the Massachusetts line. There's some kind of cool stuff going on there. There's some really, really cool things going on. Fairfield County is a bit of a mess. I think at the moment it doesn't look real good for the Merritt Parkway Trail. That's apparently what I got out of that. I'm not sure if that's completely clear or not. There are too many homeowners down there that don't want that trail going through my backyard. Shame on you. Shame on you. Anyway. So I could rant on that one. But apparently too many legal issues down there. It's really, really difficult to get rail trails that benefit all of us to go through people with massive amounts of money and their properties. So anyway, bummer, bummer, bummer. We have the same problem on the coast here in the state of Connecticut with the beaches. Interesting. So anyway, with great money gives you great power, right? Okay, moving forward. Here's a big one. And this is a big shout out to Lizzie. Lizzie Gonzalez soloed to victory for the women's U23 crown at the Pan Am Cyclocross Championships. We moved the last week. I talked about how we were going to move the Pan Am Cyclocross Championships to Massachusetts because they had a date conflict or something happened with the venue they were going to be at. So it was held in Massachusetts, and Lizzie won. And so I shout out Lizzie because I knew Lizzie when she was, you know, just little Lizzie. She was just very young, and her dad, Mark, who is very into bicycle racing and auto racing also, was bringing her to the races. And so she was racing at Mansfield Hollow and also at Hartford as a junior and when she was very young. So we've kind of watched Lizzie move her way through the system and progress, and now Lizzie is off to college and she's still racing her bike and she's doing really, really well. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. I got a little blurb here to go to and we'll talk about that a bit. So anyway, big shout out to Lizzie, really cool. Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. Okay, last week I told you about making some modifications on your bike so you could put a larger gear on the bike and maybe go to a one-by system or even allowing your derailleur to span a little bit more of the gearing in the back. So I talked about a couple of things that you can do there, and I did it. So anyway, I made that change, and I told you I would report back, and I'm going to report back. I went out yesterday with Fran. We went out and we rode on the rail trail. We didn't go very far, and we didn't go on anything super difficult, but we went out to the rail trail, and I got a chance to ride on it and to see if it would work, because I've made some kind of dramatic modifications to the bike, and I basically converted over an old triple crankset to a double and use the very, very inside gear and then also the middle chain ring on the bike. So I have a 22 tooth cog on the inside and a 34 tooth cog on the outside. And it's fabulous. It's really cool. I've got this ridiculously low gear that I could climb up almost anything on. And the big thing here, and what I had talked about last week was, and got comments back too, by the way, about cadence and the cadence is survival for me as I get older. I need my cadence to be able to get myself up the hills. And of course, by observing all of these changes in, especially in the Grand Tours and in a lot of the cyclocross bikes, observing all these changes that are happening with the lower gearing on the bikes and the faster times that are coming out of it, maybe there's something to this. Hello. So you can go faster in a lower gear. Put that together and figure it out. So anyway, very, very cool thing. I made the change. I can spin like a madman up the steepest of climbs. It's pretty cool. When we rode into Willimantic yesterday to go to the coffee shop, big shout out to Grounded Coffee, by the way, if you're listening. When we rode into the coffee shop, which is becoming a Fran and Ron thing to do, right, Franny? Yeah. Right into the coffee shop, support local business, have a little coffee, sit around, chat with people.
And see Annabelle the dog.
And see Annabelle the dog, of course.
Yeah,
there's a dog at the coffee shop. So anyway, as we rode in, it was effortless. Just really unbelievable. Really, really cool. So 11:34 rocks. That's what Billy says. Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I like it. So it's just, I never used the smallest chain ring that I had on the bike. I kind of started out there in my yard and I went, I don't need this gear. This is really ridiculous. But I used a 34-11 and I found that that's a really big gear. And I had a gear chart here. I probably have it over here and I don't really want to pay a lot of attention to it, but yeah, you can download gear charts from the internet because there's all sorts of cool stuff out there to do that with. And I found that it's a sizable enough gear where when I was actually leaving the house, Fran had scooted down the road ahead of me. And so I had to chase her down and I'm thinking, oh God, I have no gears on my bike and Fran's got bigger gears. And I just spun up probably like a 34-17 or maybe a 34-15, something like that. Not a huge gear, and was able to achieve 20 miles an hour doing that. So I don't need to go any faster than that. I don't know about you guys, but that's all I need, especially if I'm going to be riding on a cross bike off-road. I have no reason to go any faster than that. And no, I'm not outwinning any championships here. So shout out to Lizzie again. But I don't really need a bigger gear. I can do just fine, and I can keep a reasonable cadence, one that I'm comfortable with, and do just fine with it. So it's kind of cool. Let's go on to Lizzie. Let's go talk about Lizzie a little bit. I'm really, really psyched about this. It's such a cool thing because, you know, I knew her when. And her dad, I made a comment on Facebook this morning, and her dad, Mark, we've been chatting back and forth a little bit about it. So it's kind of cool. He's a proud dad, a very, very proud dad, as he should be. But anyway, this is probably one of her biggest victories of her young career, it says here. She was, let's see, make sure here. This was the Pan American Cyclocross Championships in Falmouth, Massachusetts. In a repeat from last year's podium, fellow U.S. riders Laura Zorner followed 47 seconds later to secure the silver medal, while Cassidy Hickey trailed another 29 seconds back for the bronze. Emerging from the trail, two-rider battle with Zorner and third lap, and the 19-year-old from nearby Dudley, Massachusetts, accelerated to the front and also rode solo to the victory. And it says here, my plan for today was mostly to make the other girls in my category race my race. I wanted to make sure that I was in front as soon as I could and make sure that I could manage my effort and recover in the sections that I knew I could. For me, it just worked out today, Gonzalez said. It was a good head-to-head competition with Zorner, and they've been racing among the elite women in other U.S. events this year. It all starts this season with all 10 for Gonzalez and 7 for Zorner have been in the elite races. So they did really, really well. It was a cool race. Lizzie, big shout out. We love to watch the Lizzie show. It's great. And it's really fun. And Mark, I mean, it's great. It's great. Awesome. You got your daughter into bike racing. And look where it's going. It's just really doing a great thing. So anyway, any parents out there that want to get their kids into bike racing, it's a great sport. It's just a really, really great sport. And, you know, if you focus on things like, you know, mountain bike racing or cyclocross racing, you don't have to worry about and fear the roads, because I know a lot of people fear the roads. Personally, I love the roads. And that's where, you know, my strongest interest is, but cyclocross is definitely right up there because I think it's possibly the best skill building tool that you can use to make yourself a very, very good racer or rider in general, even a group rider. Even if you're out riding on group rides and you want to improve your skills, cross racing is definitely a great way to do it. You'll learn so much when you're on a bike that just really is a little questionable when it gets off-road. So it definitely teaches you a ton of things about not fighting with your bicycle and accepting the fact that it's okay for the bike to go here and it's okay for the bike to go there, back and forth, and you don't have to always be in complete control of that bicycle. So it's kind of a cool thing. So anyway, big shout out, Lizzie. Great job. Love it. Can't wait to see what else is going to happen in the Lizzie show. So we're looking forward to seeing you at Nationals this year. Nationals are in Hartford. So Hartford's coming up very soon, next month. So we're in November already. I can't believe we're in November already.
I know. So it's hard to believe with the weather right now.
Yeah, especially with the weather. Oh, yeah. It's like 75, 77 degrees outside right now here in Connecticut in November. This is unreal. We're breaking records every day right now.
This is it. This is your last day.
Yeah, well, this is probably our last hurrah until it gets, you know, ridiculously cold. And really, it gets cold here. It gets damp here. It just gets kind of wintry.
Snowy.
And sometimes we get snow. Sometimes we do. I'm not always... I'm not always anticipating snow just because we've had some very strange weather, global warming, whatever you want to call it.
Old salt, what are your bones saying about the snow this year?
They're saying it's probably not going to happen until February.
Really?
That's me. But, you know, I just don't see it. Maybe, but the way the weather has been switching over the last few years and watching the patterns, I would say that we're probably up for a fairly reasonable riding season on into December this year.
Yeah.
That would be my feeling. There'll be bad days, but there'll be also some good days if you want to get out and ride. So, and if you want to get out and ride and you bundle up, you can pretty much ride all season long if you wish, all year long. I'm making changes now on all my bicycles so that they can accommodate the poor weather. So I can ride on bikes that don't necessarily need a system that requires me to lock my feet into the pedals. And so I can wear a heavier boot if I need to. So I can continue commuting as much as possible when I'm going to shopping and that sort of thing. It's kind of cool. I just really enjoy it. It's really fun. So anyway, like I said, the Ron challenge. I've made this challenge every week for the last couple of months, and that is that get out one day a week, just one day a week, park the car, park the motorized vehicle, and see if you just can't do it on the bike. Give it a shot. You might surprise yourself. It's a really, really cool thing. So that's something I would strongly encourage everyone to give a shot at. So, okay, let us go back to, we don't want to be here. Let's go back here and see what else is on the list of things to talk about here today. So every year, this guy by the name of Jay Vine, Fran, you know that guy?
Jay Vine.
Yeah, he's an Australian bicycle racer. Mm-hmm. Kind of a big deal. And here's where the big deal is. Let's see if I can find, do I have him right here? Yeah, okay. So Jay Vine, he was born November 16th in 1995. It's almost his birthday. Big shout out. He's an Australian professional racing cyclist who currently rides for the UCI Pro Team. Appenzin Dushadik. I can't even pronounce that one. But anyway, it doesn't matter. He was initially announced to be joining the UCI Continental Team ARA Pro Racing Sunshine Coast for the 2021 season. However, as a result of winning the 2020 Zwift Academy program, Zwift Academy program, he earned a professional contract with a Belgian UCI pro team. How about that? How about that?
People go Vine, from Zwift to okay, racing.
Right. You went from Zwift to racing. Vine made his Grand Tour debut in the 2021 Vuelta España, mm-hmm. ultimately placing 73rd. He also featured in several breakaways, the most notable of which were stages 12 and 14. On stage 12, he was the last remaining rider of a late breakaway attempt and was caught inside the final kilometer. Two stages later, with 35 kilometers left, Vine dropped back to his team car. As he was collecting something, he drifted into the side of the car and crashed. He suffered moderate road rash, but was able to recover and place third on the summit finish of Pico Villarrocas. As a result, the performances during the Vuelta, they have extended his contract by 2 years. So you know, Zwift is great, you know, and you know, he obviously the thing about Zwift is you can see people's wattage numbers. I mean, if they're really hooked up, you can see exactly what they're doing on the bike. It doesn't teach you how to do the sticky bottle though. So, you know, you're skills are lacking. And obviously this guy is strong as all get out, but he lacks some skills, and that's what caused his crash. And any of you who know what the sticky bottle is, you know, the ability to ride alongside of a team car and hold on to it without crashing into it is skill that is, you know, it requires some practice to be able to do that sort of thing. So anyway, so I just couldn't help but mention this guy because I'm watching here and I got this, you know, this feed that came in, and it's from Roulier, which is, I believe, French. I'm not sure. But anyway, they did an article back in August of 2022, from Zwift Academy to Grand Tour stage winner, Jay Vine's unfamiliar rise to the top. It's just, we're getting these new interesting riders from all different places. We're seeing a lot of cross riders who are now becoming Grand Tour riders. That was something I never thought I would ever see. Seeing as a cross race is all of an hour at most, and Grand Tour is all of, you know, like 10 to 20 days. That's an entirely different skill set that you have to do. But anyway, so in 2020, he was speaking to a camera from his living room in Australia. He's been being interviewed ahead of the finals of the Zwift Academy competition run by the indoor training platform, whereby the winner will secure a pro contract with this Belgian team that he is now riding for. He says, "It would change my life," he continues. Fast forward 2 years and plenty has changed for Vine. His dream came true, but it was surpassed perhaps by his own expectations. He's now in his second year as professional with Alpecin Denukinik. I can't pronounce that. After having his contract extended following a stellar first season as a Neo Pro, and he's not just racing the guys he's watched on TV, he's beating them.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now in the lower ranked, not in the lower ranked races, or when there's a lesser quality field. Today, Vine took his first professional victory in Grand Tour stage of the Vuelta España, with perhaps the most star-studded climbing contingent in recent history. He rode away from the famous prodigal Belgian talent, Romico Evenepoel, and Remco Evenepoel, sorry. On the first proper mountain stage of the race, he may have learnt his trade from riding indoors, but today Vine battled all the elements of the real world, fighting through the rain, fog, and mist in an epic stage to the very top of El Pico Llano. So, who is this guy? You know, he's a Zwifter. Hey, you know, follow your passion. That's all I can say is follow your passion. If your passion is, I'm going to get on this crazy computerized program and I'm going to ride my butt off and see what I can do, see what I got. My friends tell me I'm pretty good on my bike. I should see how I stand up against some of the pros online. Because a lot of the pro racers, use Zwift as a training tool.
Yeah.
And
the pro-frannies, too.
And the pro-frannies, too, right? We got Fran in the background here. And she's a big Zwifter. She likes her Zwift.
But only in the off-season.
Yeah, only in the off-season.
I'm not one of those people that rides all year, unless it's training.
That's a shout-out to Bill. Our friend Bill rides.
And I have friends in Zwift who ride all year.
No offense,
they
Bill.
They love it. It's fine. If you're into that and it works for you, it's fine.
Yeah. Hey, Kevin, you're on board. Hey, how you doing?
Don't you have people who take your spin class all year?
Oh, I do. I do. And they were there this morning. I had lots of people in my spin class this morning. Actually, today's was the lightest one I've had in a while. But I had...
Because 70 degrees.
Because I had 11 the other day. I had 11,
don't
11
worry,
people show
be back
up.
On
they'll be back. They'll be back on Wednesday when it gets cold again. But, anyway, cycling isn't supposed to work like this. Traditionally, on the men's side of the sport, especially latecomers like Vine don't just waltz into a World Tour peloton and start winning. Think about the Matthew Vanderpoels and the kids that started out and tiny, you know, when they were tiny and they became what they are today. This guy just got on Zwift and started riding fast, and all of a sudden he was out there. So the narrative has been pushed that riders should start racing as young as possible, that you need to grow up in a peloton to get used to the feeling of being in a bunch, to be able to control and handle a bike around tricky corners, alpine descents. You need to read the race and to know when it's time to attack and pace yourself and your effort. It's precisely these reasons why naysayers have looked down on the world of Zwift and e-racing. Riding stationary doesn't hone in those skills, and you learn on the road. It doesn't teach you how to wrestle for positions with someone shoulder to shoulder and how to perfectly nail the apex of a corner. That's why some said that Zwift Academy could never be a real pathway to professional bicycle racing. Since he entered the World Tour scene last year, Jay Vine has been changing that narrative. It started with his second place in the overall GC at the 2021 Tour of Turkey in his very first race with the team he's on. I'm not going to even try to pronounce it. And he was solidified with his third place finish on stage 14 of the Vuelta a España last year. Third place finish on stage 14. So the guy's like cooking. He's flying on his bike. He's 26 years old. And he's just riding strong, and you just would never have known that this could have happened. Less than a decade ago, if you had told the cycling world that the Vuelta a España stage winner would come from a background of e-racing and had been a talent spotted based on the power numbers alone, few would have believed you. But the sport is changing, and it's changing for the better. Jay Vine is proof that there's more than one way to reach the pinnacle of cycling. And with it, he's proving to more and more World Tour teams that they can look outside of the box to spot talent. So, anyway, just couldn't resist. It's a great story. You know, it's not one you would normally have seen. And so I couldn't resist bringing it up to light here because I think it's just a way, way cool thing. So let's see what else we got here today. The other thing I had mentioned earlier, I had mentioned that there was an op-ed that was put out by the Connecticut News Junkie and Carianna Provost, and it's all about, you know, the candidates that are in our Connecticut election and the the views they have towards towards traffic safety and some of them are just kind of ridiculous. She picked on a few people here, which is, sort of unfortunate. But then again, when you take a statement like this, Jillian Gilchrist, she's participating in an election. I don't know where she is from in Connecticut, but she is in an election. We might want to consider a public awareness campaign and think broadly about various partners and communities we engage in, speaking out about the importance of pedestrian and bicycle safety and distracted driving. What have we been doing the last 5 or 6 years? Where have you been? What rock are you living under? Hello, Jillian, wake up. You might want to get your facts straight, because right there, I don't care if you're in my party or not in my party, in my town or whatever, I'm not going to vote for you just because of that statement right there, because you are not paying attention. You're paying about as much attention to the political reasoning as to why we need to do something about this whole distracted cycling thing, and I mean a distracted driving thing with cyclists and pedestrians. You're paying about as much attention to that as I am to, I don't know, you. I have no idea who you are. But anyway, so this is something you might want to consider. You know how I talk about, you know, getting involved in your communities and how you need to get active, get loud, you know, get out there, talk, go to your town meetings like I did a couple of weeks ago and make statements. This is what I'm talking about. This is your opportunity to do something about something like this. You don't want that person in your state legislature making decisions that affect you, because they're not aware. They're not paying attention. They're paying about as much attention as they do probably when they're driving their behemoth vehicle down the road using their cell phone. Enough said. Anyway, I'll leave her alone. And if you want to find out who those candidates are and you are from Connecticut and you are voting tomorrow and you want to see who it is who made what statements, you can go to the Connecticut News Junkie and check it out. It is posted on my Facebook page, Bicycle Talk. So check it out and see what you see and let me know. So, and please get out and vote. And, you know, another cool thing is, and Fran has propelled herself without a vehicle to voting in the past. I think she ran over a few times, but it's like four miles from our house. It's not that far away. But, you know, instead of driving the vehicle, the motorized vehicle, she propelled herself physically, which is really cool. So maybe when you go and vote tomorrow, it would be a good day for you to break out that bicycle and ride over to your polling place and do your vote. And you'll be making a statement there. I worked I'm in District 4 right now. It was District 2 at the fire department in Eagleville a number of years ago. I worked that for just one vote. And we had one person come in on a bicycle and vote. And you know who that person was, Fran?
No.
Saul Nesselroth. Aww. Our 96-year-old Thread City cycler who still rides his bicycle. He showed up to vote on his bicycle. So there you go. If a 96-year-old guy can show up to vote on his bicycle, why can't you? Hello. Figure it out. Anyway, I'm back to the whole voting thing. I'll be done with it by tomorrow. I'll be so exhausted that I won't have any energy left to talk about it anymore. Being a poll worker, especially if you're a moderator or a registrar, you're there all day. And you're there from the very beginning to the very end. And then when I send everybody home, after we've cleaned everything up and shut down the polls, I then have to go up to the town hall and report up there and then bring all my materials. And I have to download all my voting information, all my results at the town hall. So it extends another hour or so onto my day. But it's a long day. All I can tell you is that I got to be there at 5:00 in the morning. The polls close at 8 p.m. It's a long day. It's a long day. But you know what? Big shout out to my poll workers. I have the absolute best people you could possibly have working with me. They're lovely. They're really good at what they do. I really appreciate them. They have a good sense of humor because they have to deal with me all day long. So I give them a lot of credit there. So that's a really, really good thing. This article that was put out by Kariana Provost, it kind of made me dig a little bit more because I wanted to know a little bit more about what's going on with traffic violence. And so where do I go? I go to the source. You go to Bike Portland. Yeah, that's Portland, Oregon. Yeah, everybody knows everybody rides a bike in Portland, right? Doesn't matter whether it's raining, whether it's sunny, it doesn't really matter. And occasionally they even get snow. But there's definitely a cycling community there. So when I went to Bike Portland, I found some information. And that is not where it is. Hang on here 1 second here, and I will dig it up for you. Here it is. So, Don is asking me, what do you make of Op-Ed's point that infrastructure reform, bike lanes, etc., is more effective than trying? Oh, yeah. I make that's probably not entirely the truth. I think that bike lanes are great. They certainly change the way most people can travel on their bicycles, but the real trick to making it safer for all of us on the streets is not about more bike lanes. It's about traffic calming. And the traffic calming is, I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it over and over and over again. And my friends up in stores who have been campaigning this for the long, long time, Laurel and Justin, it's all about roundabouts. It's all about roundabouts. Put the roundabouts in, the traffic gets calm. You can't go through a roundabout at high speed without either destroying your car or, well, you'll destroy your vehicle. That's all there is to it. You're just not going to be able to do it. That's the only way to slow things down, as far as I'm concerned. That's the only way to really, truly make our streets safe. And again, back to Don's point here, the safety on the streets, in order to make it safer to ride bicycles on the street, we need to put more bicycles on the street. That's the answer. That's it. The more bikes that are out there, the safer everything gets. It really changes the whole presentation, because when people who are driving motorized vehicles look and they see a group of cyclists or lots of cyclists on the road, maybe it's only, you know, they're driving down a road and they see a cyclist and then they come around the next corner and then they see another cyclist and they come around the next corner and they see another cyclist. It's putting a visual piece out in front of them, which basically tells them that people who ride bicycles are on this road. I need to slow down or I need to find another road to drive my vehicle on. That's another option. That's another option you have as a motorized vehicle driver. My answer is roundabouts. More the merrier. They're proven. They really work. They save lives of people that are walking. They save lives of people that are riding their bicycles. And here's the big bonus. They save lives of people that are driving motorized vehicles. Because if you are given, is this a human nature thing? If you're given the opportunity to be stupid, you will be stupid. And unfortunately, when you're behind the wheel of a 4,000-pound weapon, you can be stupid. And no one really cares. And, you know, I mean, yeah, if there was a police officer there that saw you being stupid, you might get a ticket for it. If you were extremely stupid, you might get a suspension on your license for it, but you probably won't. And, you know, it's too many opportunities. So what do? We put up traffic lights. Traffic lights are a lovely idea. They work. They will stop you when you have cars coming from the other direction. Or sometimes they just don't, because someone is paying more attention to their social media while driving their car down the road, or to their whatever it is, work email, who the heck knows. And they're paying more attention to their phone than they are to their driving abilities. And then they just zoom right through a red light because they didn't see it. They were distracted and they cause huge problems. And it's the distracted driving thing can be cured by, one more time, roundabouts. That's the answer. That's the answer. I'm going to say it over and over again. If you don't have any roundabouts in your town and you have a particularly difficult intersection that has hurt or killed people, you might want to make a proposal. Go to your town hall. Go to your town meetings. That's what we did a couple of weeks ago. We went to a town meeting, and there were four of us there that all made statements about a particular intersection, which they were getting ready. The state of Connecticut was getting ready to build a traffic light there. And, you know, I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. If you hadn't caught it, check back a couple episodes, and you'll see exactly where I'm going to here and why it just makes so much more sense. But anyway, to answer your question in great length there, and sorry, Don, there it is. Hey, Mark, you missed my shout out to Lizzie. I see you're online right now. So anyway, I'll give another little plug towards the end. But anyway, we're just so psyched about Lizzie and how well she's doing right now. And it must be great to be you right now and have her as your daughter. That's really cool. So anyway, I got to move forward here. This is from Bike Portland. America has a new strategy to end traffic violence, and it's pretty good. And this came out back in January of 2022. And it emphasizes what they're doing in Portland, Oregon to increase traffic safety. And, you know, they have a lot of people that use bicycles in Portland. It's a big city. They've got, I don't know how many people live in Portland. You know that one, Fran?
I didn't find out for you.
Yeah, why don't you find out for me? I mean, it's a large city, so it has a lot of intricate problems. The good news is it's a Western city, and the Western cities have a different, I would say a more advanced traffic structure.
Yeah,
than
grid structure.
Well, they're, you know, they weren't put down in colonial days. The roads weren't put down in colonial days. So it's,
I can talk about Portland structure if you want.
Well, I'm just more interested in how many people live there. If you have that information, that'd be great.
Well, this is Portland proper. This is the city of Portland. Remember,
right.
The city
of Portland.
Portland is not just the city of Portland. It's a whole metropolis.
I understand.
So the, city of Portland proper is 641,162 in 2021.
Wow.
But
it's not as many as I thought it was.
Well, because when you think of Portland, you don't just think of Portland. You think of there's unincorporated Multnomah County, and there's Lake Oswego, and Gresham.
It's like thinking of Hartford or Hartford County, right?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is entirely different.
So I'll tell you metropolitan Portland population, too.
Which
because,
is?
You know, it's very easy to go from Portland to, like, Milwaukee. It's right there.
And it is? If you have that information, that'd be great.
I have to look.
All I know is there, you know, I started going to Portland a number of years ago, back in the 80s.
2.51 million people.
Yeah,
that's
so,
the metro area.
So that's getting close to the state of Connecticut, where we're 3.5 million people.
I know.
So, yeah. And it's not anywhere near Boston area, which the greater metropolitan area is like 7 million people, but it's still, and then New York City being 8 million people. But the fact is that there are a lot of people that ride bikes there because the weather, even though it is damp, and it is cold damp because it's, you know, it's the 40 degrees and raining is just not my favorite type of weather. But
the population is almost 20 million people.
In where?
New York metropolitan.
New York metropolitan.
That's when you're talking about.
Yeah, that's why
Connecticut, New York.
That's
Jersey.
Why you can't get from here to there with any kind of efficiency, unless you consider a train, which is a possibility.
Yeah.
So, anyway, and that's not necessarily going to get you there faster. It's just going to get you there with less frustration.
Yes.
So,
which is unfortunate.
This goes on. So here's a statement. Technology alone will not save us. We need a national change in mentality. You know who said that?
No.
Pete Buttigieg.
Very nice.
Our transportation secretary, current transportation secretary. He's not wrong. Pete's made some, he's traveled around the world. He's been to the Norwegian or Denmark and all the, he's been to the places that are doing it right. And he's seen the difference. And he sees it as, I've talked about Pete a number of times because he was a mayor when he went there, and he looked at it from a financial point of view, and he has made a number of strong statements, and he is still currently studying the fact that you can actually improve your financial situation by changing your infrastructure towards a more bicycle and pedestrian type of society. So it will not kill the economy. It'll actually enhance the economy. It's just a change which needs to happen. And the sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned. Definitely the sooner the better. So Secretary Buttigieg and it's the first step towards reaching a goal of reaching zero road fatalities. I don't think we're ever going to reach zero road fatalities. As long as we're driving motorized vehicles, I think that that's virtually impossible. And I'm not saying that I think everyone should give up their motorized vehicle. I like my motorized vehicle. I enjoy it. Mark likes to race his motorized vehicle. So I get that. And you got to like a cool ride, too. I love your Facebook page. Fun. Anyway, motorized vehicles are they're part of our society. You know, it's something that we all kind of grew up with. And, you know, my dad was an automobile mechanic. He owned a garage. That's where I grew up. I grew up in that whole idea of motorized vehicles. I still have one, and I will always probably have one unless some really, really strong changes take place. But I can't see any reason not to, because they have their useful place, especially when you live here in the cold and wet and, sometimes tragically long winters of the Northeast, where, it's just a lot more comfortable to drive your motorized vehicle than it is to ride your bicycle. So I get that. I totally understand that. But the fact is that we are going to be making these changes. The National Roadway Safety Strategy is strong behind this, and they have a 42-page plan that not only discusses not only outlines the multi-layered strategy, but gives us a look at national crash statistics, a map showing a state-by-state fatality rate per 100 million miles driven shows that Oregon, with 1.37, the highest rate on the West Coast, and among the top 25% deadliest in the country. The plan also centers on how the lack of safety on our roads unfairly impacts people with lower incomes, Black people and other communities of color, as well as the most vulnerable road users like bicycle riders, walkers, and transit users. Because, you know, it's a motorized vehicle is an expensive investment. And as my dad said to me when I bought my first new car, this is my dad being a dad. My dad said, "Congratulations," he said, "you just made the worst investment of your life." He wasn't wrong. And this is a guy who fixed cars for a living. That's what he did. So I looked at him, not knowing, because I was young and stupid, and my dad had been on the earth for a little bit longer than I had, and he had seen a lot more than I had seen. So obviously, he did have some wisdom there that I wasn't willing to accept at that young age. But I looked at him, kind of shook my head and went, "What the heck are you talking about?" And then, of course, as you get deeper and deeper into it, you start to understand that a motorized vehicle just costs you money. From day one, from the day you sign on the line and buy the vehicle, to the insurance that you buy for it, to the fuel that you put into it, to the maintenance that you put into it to keep you going, to the taxes that you pay on the vehicle, it is nothing but it's a money suck. It just draws money out. The bicycle, there's an initial investment in a bicycle. Bicycle definitely. Depending on what level bike you get or how many bicycles you own, as many of us have more than one, it can certainly become an expense, but it's not an ever, well, depending on what level of cycling you get into, it doesn't have to be a forever expense. It can really provide you with a lot of transportation needs and entertainment needs and physical fitness needs for many, many years at a much lower price than that of a motorized vehicle. So anyway, the plan that they have in Portland is very simple. Safer people. Encourage safe, responsible behavior by people who use their roads and create conditions that prioritize their ability to reach their destination unharmed. Safer roads. Design the roadway environments to mitigate human mistakes and account for injury tolerances to encourage safer behaviors and to facilitate safe travel by the most vulnerable users. There's my, here it pops up every time. There's my roundabout. There's my traffic circle. Safer vehicles. Expand the availability of vehicle systems and features that help prevent crashes and minimize the impact of crashes on both occupants and non-occupants. Now, there are more and more vehicles that are coming through with detection of pedestrians and cyclists, and that is definitely a direction where, you know, you're looking at a safer vehicle in that particular case. So certainly that. It does not stop you from driving through a red light. So therefore, we still have that problem. Did I say roundabout? Anyway, safer speeds. Promote safer speeds in all roadway environments through a combination of thoughtful, context-appropriate roadway design, targeted education and outreach campaigns, and enforcement. Road calming. That's what that is. It's just traffic calming, traffic calming, traffic calming, which goes right back to the same old thing, roundabouts. There we are. Post-crash care. Enhance the survivability of crashes through expedient access to emergency medical care while creating a safe working environment for vital first responders and preventing secondary crashes through a robust traffic incident management practice. So, what does that mean? That's a good question. Maybe if you're having the same accidents at the same intersection time after time after time, and people are just, they keep getting hurt, they keep getting injured, then maybe that would be an issue. I know that as I look at the University of Connecticut campus, I know they have more vehicle to pedestrian impacts on Route 195, the state road that goes through 195, that goes through the UConn campus, than any other place. And most of them are in crosswalks because people are not paying attention to crosswalks when driving their motorized vehicles. How do you stop that? I have a lot of ideas as how you can stop that, but first thing I would do is I would raise that side, I would raise that crossing, so that when you hit it with your car and you're not paying attention, you are very awakened to the fact that there's a crosswalk there and maybe you should slow down, and that wouldn't be a bad idea. Once again, we go back to traffic calming, and we're going back to the same solution each and every time. It's always about making the vehicles slow down to 20 miles per hour when they're going through an intersection, not stopping the vehicles from going through the intersection. Keep the traffic flowing, keep everything moving, and, you know, everyone will be a lot safer. And they'll have to be more aware. It's sort of like when, you know, when people talk to me about, you know, well, I would ride my bike on the road, but I find the roads aren't safe. And I comment, well, Fran's heard it 1,000 times from me, roads with names, not with numbers. Get on the back roads, because the back roads require driver attention far more so than the big wide state roads with the big wide shoulders that are quote unquote safer. They're not safer, they're faster. That doesn't make them safer. It makes them faster. And actually, it increases fatalities, doesn't decrease fatalities, because impacts are made at higher speed. It's not rocket science, folks, and I never studied it, and that's all I know at this point. I'm starting to run out of time here, so I'm going to have to move on to another rant for another week as we go on through. I had a nice little piece here about cyclist, pedestrian, motorist clash over COVID street changes, and which is kind of interesting what people get upset about. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the bicycle industry, which I will get to on the next show next week, and I'll explain to you what's going on there. The word is that it's bike industry is Shimano's way up in numbers. Things are happening in the bike industry. People are riding bikes. They're riding bikes more. So this is a good thing. But anyway, I also will shout out to you today too, because this is the last day that you can sign up for this thing online. And this is there's an open reception for the exhibition, The Bicycle Game, in Hartford. And that is going to be, let's see here, make sure I got this right. This will be in the Connecticut Historical Society, and it starts on November 17th, but they would like you to register for that by the end of the day today. If you can, they might take registrations afterwards, but it's an open ceremony, open reception, and it is Thursday the 17th from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., and it's free, so that's kind of a cool thing. And they're talking here about the 1890s saw an unprecedented surge in the popularity of bicycles in Connecticut, thanks to the entrepreneur Albert Pope, and the Hartford-based Pope Manufacturing Company was a leader in bicycle production. The Bicycle Game explores the moment in history in an interactive and playful exhibition designed for visitors of all ages and groups of or on their own. In galleries, the visitors will find the history of the bicycle transformed by an angry villain into a series of games and puzzles that must be solved. From trivia to bicycle racing to chutes and ladders, visitors will need to rely on a host of skills to make their way through the game and preserve this important moment in Connecticut history. Visit the Bicycle Game and take history for a ride. So very cool. It's at 1 Elizabeth Street in Hartford, Connecticut. Light refreshments will be served. And it says here, please let us know if you'll be able to join us by November 10th. So you still have a couple more days there to sign up for that. And I just signed up this morning. So anyway, what else we have going on? More cross racing still happening. Lots of stuff going on. We just got through the Pan American Cyclocross Championships in Falmouth, Massachusetts. Big shout out to Lizzie Gonzalez for her big victory there. Very, very cool. So that's really cool. With the other thing that we have coming up really soon too, November 10th. December 6th through 11th, the National Cyclocross Championships are back in Hartford, back to Hartford. Since 2017, when our first championships were there, we are now getting our second national championships in Hartford, in Riverfront Park, the same place. Very cool, really exciting, can't wait. We'll see you there, I hope. Finishing points, get out and vote. It really does make a difference. Continued shout outs to Too Tall Billy and Laura Mullaly. You're two tough characters. See you Saturday, Billy. Heal up, both of you, and get back out on that bike. Yay, Lizzie. Yay, Lizzie. We're really psyched for you, Lizzie. Lizzie Gonzalez is just really, I've known her since she was just a little girl racing her bike. So very, very cool, and very cool that her proud dad is watching the show here today. Very cool. So, Zwifters, are you ready to be the next Jay Vine? Don't forget to sign up for the Bicycle Game and the Connecticut Historical Society. And I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and join the revolution of change. Remember, when presenting to your local governments, positive beats negative every single time. Go there with solutions, not problems. Please support your local bike shop. Respect one another. It's 2022. Initiate. I lost my place. Participate, ride your bike, and tell everyone you know. And finally, take on the Pedal and Ron Challenge. If you have a motorized vehicle, park it for a day. Just use your bike. You may surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. That's it. I've run out of time. If you have anything you want to contribute to the show, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening.
I want to ride my bike.